Speaker, notes on 2-Fulgaroidea niptera, species associated with black spruce, and Matt Bowser.
Thanks, Derek. I don't usually read from notes, but I'm going to this time. I'll keep things quick and concise. Much of the entomology that I've done, the work I've done, has been what Derek has aptly referred to correctly as kill 'em and count 'em work. But today I'm going to share about something that I really enjoy doing. It's not work that I expect to change the world very much at all, but it was an effort to at least get to know a couple of obscure species, get to know them intimately. Oh, let me put my talk up here, won't we?
Isn't it right there in the middle?
Oh yeah, thank you. Good eye. I'll be talking about Syxiades and Achillids. I don't know how to pronounce those. I'm just trying to. Which we have a total of, that we know about about 4 species in Alaska. And I'm going to just, as a background, summarize what I've been able to find out about all 4 of those species. So the nymphs of Syxiades are subterranean. They feed on roots of vascular plants or fungi. Adults are usually collected from woody plants, but in most cases that's all we know about them. For most species, we only know about the adult host plants, and they're often pretty they're more generalist as adults. Only a few species of Syxiades have been well studied worldwide, and these are species that are vectors of phytoplasmas, which are plant pathogens that affect agricultural crops, including coconuts and strawberries. So those species associated with coconuts and strawberries that have been well studied. And these phytoplasmas are very specialized plant pathogenic bacteria that can't live outside of their host. They can only live in the plant tissues and in the insect tissues. And also, Syxiade nymphs are occasionally tended by ants, or sometimes tended by ants. The ants harvest honeydew, while the nymphs feed on roots underground. And some Syxiades are apparently obligate guests of ants, where the nymphs are inside of ant colonies, feeding on roots underground. They totally live inside of ant colonies. We have only 2 species of Syxiades we know about from Alaska. The Syxius nervosus is very widespread. It's whole Arctic and in Asia, North America, and then down into as far south as China and the Middle East and North Africa. And we have a couple of specimen records from Big Delta, Alaska. But I think that's all we know, the only records from Alaska. But despite this worldwide distribution, and they're apparently abundant, no one has looked into the natural history of this species at all. All we know is that the adults are taking on woody shrubs, including alders, birches, willows, and others. And that's pretty much what we know about that species. Syxius meridionalis is our other Syxiade. And it's the one that's best represented in Alaska collections. We've got it from interior and south central and southeast Alaska. And it gets down into across Canada from coast to coast and down into the lower 48 states. And it's the one that's very common right at Headquarters Lake, just in my backyard where I work. But nothing is known at all about its biology, or was known about it. So this last summer, I set out to learn more about the species, especially its host plants and life history, mostly just by taking walks in the wetland on my lunch breaks and poking around for them. But this is the kind of thing I love. Whenever you have a species that's all around, and all you can find is a citation that says nothing is known about its biology. That's the kind of thing I really like. So this is the typical habitat of Syxius meridionalis. This is where the nymphs would be found. You can see where I ripped up this hummock a little bit. They're almost always in a moist carpet in a black spruce forest with plenty of dwarf ericaceous shrubs, crowberries in this case. what fifth instar nymph looks like. There are five nymphal instars. So this one's close to being an adult. And these, the paler patches on the abdomen, towards the end of the abdomen there, those are wax plates. And from those wax plates, the nymphs exude a fine filamentous waxy secretion. We'll see an example of that later. So this is what a feeding site looks like. This is a nymph. This is a fourth instar nymph. We're sent feeding on a root of leatherleaf, Camidaphne calypiolata. And I was able to find this kind of situation a lot of different times in the black spruce wetlands. So you would just be picking apart the peat moss and other mosses, feather mosses. And you'd be able to find these places where they've been feeding. And sometimes I could just ascertain with certainty the kind of root it was feeding on. But it was often really hard to tell what they were feeding on, because just opening up the moss disturbed them, and they can hop and move quickly. So I took one plug of the wetland that included a lot of potential host plants, had a number of plants in it, and brought it into my office, put it in a sunny spot by the window, watered it, and kept an eye on it. And I was able to document feeding. This one, if you look at all the things that might be legs or proboscis, there is a proboscis inserted into the root of, in this case, a crowberry. And that's, so it's a laboratory setting, you can't be sure that's doing well, but it's consistent. They appear to be polyphagous on shrubs and on spruce. And I was also able to, I collected over the whole summer, at least once a week, and I was able to get an idea of what their life history was. So it appears that this species, unlike other species that have been studied, other species have a one-year or a two-year life cycle. This one appears to take multiple years, at least in the wetland. You can see we get for like a third, fourth, and fifth instar, that the ones that I have sampled well, that those instars could be found across the whole summer. And this is something that I think it's a pretty common adaptation of animals to, of insects to cold climates, that they have protracted life cycle. I think this is what's going on here, especially these wetlands, being at the bottom of inversions, and you're on this insulated moss carpet. It's often, these are very cold summers, or cold soils even in the summer. So in conclusion, I was able to find that these were polyphagous on black spruce and on dwarf ericaceous shrubs. It appears to take multiple years to reach adulthood, at least at Headquarters Lake. And I also did find them occasionally tended by Myrmica alaskensis ants, so little myrmecine ants would apparently tend them. But this, I should stress that these are findings just for this little area. The species occurs outside of the range of black spruce, so it's probably on other hosts as well. I was never able to find it far from a spruce, from a black spruce. I looked at similar habitats on white, couldn't find it on that. Doesn't mean that they're not. And I also looked beyond into similar hummocks that had all the ericaceous shrubs, same mosses. I was never able to find them beyond about 2 meters from a black spruce. On to our other group of obscure fulgaroid hoppers that you can find underground in Alaska. A cryptic animal. These are the achillids. And these are almost always found in logs where they feed on fungi. They're dorsiventrally flattened and they're very cryptic, brown mottled things that will be under bark of logs. We know of two species from Alaska, one of which is undescribed. So for the described one first, it's pretty widespread in the Arctic, from Alaska to California and Florida. We have one specimen record taken by Skeeter Werner at mile 334 is the locality data. I'm pretty sure it's from Bonanza Creek or that vicinity. That's why I was asking Jim earlier where that would be. And this species of biology, despite being pretty widespread, is unknown. The best data we have is from Skeeter's label. It was taken on birch bark. At least that's all I've been able to find. We also have this undescribed species, which we've been able to collect number of examples of the adults. And it's known so far only from interior Alaska and the Kenai Peninsula. And until very recently, I had not been able to find the nymphs. I'd looked around for these. And the adults, you'd be out in a wetland and the adults would land on your shoulder or something. But it doesn't tell you much about how they live their lives at all. But this fall, very late in November, I was able to find nymphs in black spruce logs on the margins of the wetland at Headquarters Lake. So this is an adult, and this was a third instar nymph taken from soil. So this is a habitat I found them in. It wasn't the real peaty, very wet wetland. This was on the wetland margin where it's still somewhat damp, but I still had black spruce. This is a black spruce log in which nymphs were collected. So in this picture there is a black spruce, or it is an achillid nymph, a Syxidia nymph right there. And I show it to show the context. And it's right next to, I'm interested in finding out what the fungal host might be, which is, I think, pretty hard to do. But this is a witch's butter fungus.
I think it's only one species. Witch's butter.
Actually, there's not. I did ID this one. There are more.
Okay.
Yep. So, they're in different, they're morphologically very similar, or almost identical. But they're in different families even. This one's Dacromyces, and they're ecologically very different. They both are on rotting logs, but one is parasitic on other fungi, on other wood rotting fungi, and this one is a primary. It's breaking down the wood. I did photograph Basidia and such. I had it misidentified as another, which is butter at first.
The Tremulum isn't too?
Yeah, Tremula, yeah. I thought it was a tremula, but it's not. It's Dacromyces crexisburnus. And this is a close-up of, so here you can see what those waxy secretions look like in place. This is a fifth instar Syxidia nymph in its hibernaculum there. And this is another example of a kind of place where I was finding them this November in very rotten, highly decayed logs, partially buried logs under moss. Not just under bark, but inside the cuboid rot, you have spaces in between there. This is a close-up of an overwintering, from later in November, overwintering achillid. Same specimen, or same individual, which I left out there. I'm going to go see if I can get it again later and rear it out. That's all. Just some quick notes on some obscure animals.
I have a question.
Sure.
So you found, you can't find any information about these anywhere. You're like, these are cool. How do you know that the instars are the same?
Okay, so there have been...
And the eggs and the...
Oh, how could I know? Oh, that's the same species. So I did rear out, so I did collect nymphs and rear them to adulthood.
Oh, okay. So you could watch them.
Yeah, well, I haven't done it in this case.
Okay.
For the achillid, but for the syxiads, I just found these achillid nymphs this fall. But the syxiads, I was able to. I should mention what the most relevant finding here is. But the. But so I reared them out in that case. And then there are other species of syxiads, the economically important ones, that are better studied. They described the nymphal instars.
Oh, okay.
So I was able to look at the size classes I had and the differences and compare them with better described species for that. But I haven't read this one out yet, but I'm pretty sure the only one we've collected around is this one described species from the Kenai. So I think that's it. But the most relevant finding is that all the other species of syxiads are assumed to have a fairly brief life cycle, either univoltine or take 2 years. But almost all of it is just based on adult records you'd find. The adults are just appear at one time of the year. But I think there probably are other cases where they take potentially several years to reach adulthood, but then you'll have a emergence at the same time. So it looks, if you're just looking at adults.
You know anyone making motions with the undescribed species?
No, but kind of for the long term, Lois O'Brien does, she is planning on working on a revision of the genus.
Okay.
but I'm going to prod her a little bit more on, because I might look into this one's biology more. It'd be nice to put it together with something like that, but I don't know how fast she's moving on that.
I think that's an important way of doing biology.
Yeah.
And he said of doing necrology.
Instead of just killing them and counting them.
And there's potential, a place I would like to look is that these are potential vectors of phytoplasmas, and recently phytoplasmas have been found in spruce in Europe. And they tend to, one of the causative agents of witch's broom and other deformities. They're hard to detect. You pretty much use molecular methods mostly. Not to say that they're there, but it'd be interesting to check.